If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, we're going to go to the phones now, and I want to introduce you to Jeff Smith. He's Managing General Partner of Quantum IoT, and he's going to explain a little bit about that for us. I understand he's quite a fascinating guy. He's going to be making a presentation at MetroCon, which is going on October 26th at the Arlington Convention Center. More on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. Jeff's worked on the superconducting super collider in Waxahachie. He's been an entrepreneur, a CTO, and visionary during his career. A lot of fascinating things. But Jeff, we're very, very happy to have you on the program, Jeff.
Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Now, you're going to be making a presentation at MetroCon, and I understand what is centers on the Internet of Things, IoT. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's the area of IoT is moving rather rapidly, and there's a number of deployments, and I'm going to be talking about those and some use cases.
Well, good. Can you give us sort of a tease, maybe a preview, without giving away your whole bag of tricks? But what can we expect when we go to MetroCon and we listen to the things you have to say?
Sure. And from a presentation standpoint, I like to make it interactive and entertaining, but at the same time have content which is useful to folks that may not know that much about it. And at the same time, we can go pretty deep from a technology standpoint. And doing all that in a short period is challenging, but I find it quite fun. The areas that I really like to go into are particular use cases, both at the return on investment sort of area, and then all the way down to the technology and technological implementations. The broad-based theme that I would like to purvey is that you need to widen your aperture as to what the Internet of Things are. And within the widening of that aperture, I'm going to talk about use cases in three different verticals. One is in healthcare and telemedicine. The second one is in industrial IoT. And the third one is food, entertainment, and beverage. And so we'll go into each of those different use cases and each of those different implementations, because these are, in fact, systems which have gone from just an idea into a proof of concept, into a deployment, and then follow on capabilities in order to add on different features and functions.
When I mention IoT as what I'm told is exploding to my friends at IBM, they say, well, you know, this is old hat. We've been doing IoT, you know, for a long time. Sometime everything's going to have its own IP address, and that's the way things are going to be, and this isn't really anything too new. But I think the emphasis is the rapidity that it's moving, that it's happening so fast all of a sudden after having slow starts. Is that the panorama we're looking to?
It really is. We're building the perfect storm. If I could historically go back, the first time I implemented something that would be considered, you know, sort of IoT-ish was a system that I deployed in 1974 when I was a high school student in the Bay Area, and I had something that was sensing the light on the outside, and it used an electric antenna from a high-end Cadillac in order to raise and lower my shades. And then, you know, of course, we progressed quite a bit, and back at Motorola, back in the late 70s, early 80s, when we had some digital wireless capability that we were deploying for the FBI, we had the opportunity to be able to take information remotely and then send it back using telemetry. And so certainly, the IoT-type solutions, there's a lot of SCADA systems out there in the oil and gas industry and things like that. When I worked at Dow Chemical, when I worked at the superconducting super collider, we had 2,500 square miles of stuff that could hurt you. And so we had to make sure that we could track things like crescent wrenches, because with a high power magnet, like at the super collider, it could become a projectile. And so there are lots of things that have happened over the last 25, 30, 35 years that are IoT-ish. The sort of perfect storm that's happened is the capability of the single chip microcontroller and low power capabilities of that that are remote, the capability to build in that some sensing capability, which has really been brought on by a lot of MEMS technology. And then the third area is, of course, wireless, and both short-range wireless and long-range wireless and low-cost capabilities are, you know, some of the things that together, those three together, create. And then the cloud capability of being able to do analytics with the data that comes in, all of a sudden you have the perfect storm in order to get some real advantage.
So all these things coming together at one time is what's giving us the perfect storm. Battery, advances in battery, MEMS you mentioned, of course, those have been in development now pretty much for the past, 10, 15 years or even longer. But now everything is kind of merging. Technologies are speaking to each other and saying, hey, how can we integrate? And that is what is giving us the perfect storm. So what do we have to look forward to?
Well, you know, it's kind of fun because when I look out into the future, I try to look at my millennial son, who's 16, and today he's actually in the Amazon, and he has a little Pelican box, and inside that Pelican box is a Raspberry Pi, an industrial Raspberry Pi with a Iridium Edge, which is a very low-cost, small-burst data transmitter. And he's doing measurements with a National Geographic team in the Amazon River in the middle of nowhere. And he's has a little website which was enabled by Quantum IoT. And that little website has the ability to be able to take this information from the Iridium Edge product that has a temperature sensor in what's called the Boiling River, which is a river that's 200 degrees Fahrenheit. In fact, the readings that I'm getting right now from that SBD is from Iridium is about 90.1 degrees centigrade. And when you talk about a 16-year-old that has the ability to be able to build a website in order to integrate the Raspberry Pi with a satellite transmitter in the middle of the Amazon and have that information recorded back, now what you have is a vision of what the future is.
Okay, well, for those of us who are not in the culinary realm, would you be a little more specific about this Raspberry Pi? You caught me by surprise here.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, there's really a couple of different maker type efforts that are out there. One is the Arduino project, and the other one is the Raspberry Pi. And these types of devices are relatively simple to program. And Arduino has a language which is very C-like, but I've seen children as young as 8 or 9 years old with the ability to be able to integrate sensors into the Arduino and then have that report back and do interesting things, both from a robotic standpoint and just a sensing and control. The Raspberry Pi is a bit more sophisticated. It's a very low-cost device that in some cases is a small microcontroller that has the ability to be able to run a Linux type operating system, which allows you to use all the libraries that are out there and all the languages that are out there, like simple scripting languages and also languages as sophisticated as Python, and libraries that allow you to communicate that information out to the cloud in order to use the cloud processing capability to do things like data analytics. And these things are being adopted by this millennial group and even younger. And so we need to make sure that we're abreast of all of that technology and what's going on there, because as those kids start growing up and start showing up at our engineering facilities, they're going to want to use these new capabilities in order to solve some of the great problems of the world.
Wow. So when you speak to us and the engineers at MetroCon, October 26th. We're looking forward to that. But what are you going to? What's the takeaway? What is the one big message you're going to want to leave us with?
Transformation. I think the one word is transformation. That is that we're going through Industrial 4.0, and in Industrial 4.0, that transformation is really transforming businesses into real time. And in order to move your business into real time and take advantage of some of these new technologies in this perfect storm, you need to be aware of all of those technologies and what the capabilities are and how you're going to be able to adopt those in order to remain competitive within your industrial segment. And then by looking at what other companies are doing, will probably spawn all kinds of interesting ideas for yourself about how you'll be able to embed this technology into your business in order to grow it tremendously over the next few years.
So it'd be really advantageous if business people attended the conference and got to hear the things that you had to say so they could prepare for what they're doing, because technology moves so rapidly. Sometimes it's just a big surprise, especially with us old-timers. You know, I've been doing this for 50 years, interviewing people, and I've seen I've seen it all change, you know, from back in the old days that we had magnetic tape and a reel-to-reel, and I'd be out on the street during the Detroit riots. And we had to have a cameraman with an enormous camera, but a sound man with a two-wheeler who walked behind him so that we could do the sound. So there was three people that got to be sent to everything, and it was very cumbersome. And then we had to bring it back in the studio through the big iron doors and put it in the soup. And it took, until 11 o'clock to get the film developed and edited and ready for air. Things have all changed in broadcasting now. And, of course, I'm sitting at a computer and working a program, and it's all digital, and it's all fast, and it's all easy. So these things come in clobbers in the back of the head without our hardly noticing it. And so we need evangelists like you out in the marketplace saying, hey, people, watch it. You know, it's coming. It's going to hit you like a hammer. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And you got my moniker right. I've been an evangelist for a long time. I started companies at one of the first ISPs, Internet Service Providers, and bought Sesquinet from Rice University in order to grow a worldwide hosting and ISP company, and then started one of the first IoT companies back called SensorLogic, and built another one called Ublip and a few others. And, you know, we'll talk about that and talk about the transformation that's in everyone's future.
Well, Jeff, you were with a superconducting super collider, and a lot of us, maybe me first, were very, very disappointed when that Congress scrapped that. Now, be honest, you know, is the United States taking a back seat now because we did not move forward with developing the super collider in Waxahachie?
Well, certainly we have, and you know, we've continued to make progress within the United States, but the world actually has taken a back seat, you know, from a basic science standpoint. And that's because when you have CERN in Switzerland to be able to do some documentation on a particular experiment, you really need a second theater of experiment in order to be able to do that. And now, at the same time, from a technology standpoint, what most people don't realize is that places like University of Texas at Arlington are doing a lot of the basic research on and the magnet test lab is still in place, and a lot of the basic research on a lot of the analytics because of the data capacity around the world and a large facility at UTA, in addition to the detector mechanism, which was a lot of it was developed at UTA and other universities around the world. And so that collaboration will still happen worldwide, but certainly at the Super Collider, when Congress, you know, had the short-term sort of mentality from a budgetary standpoint in order to kill the project, it was devastating to our basic science. And that night that they killed that project, people may remember that I printed 100 T-shirts that said had a picture of the magnet delivery shaft, and it said Congress gave Texas shaft October 21st, 1993. I started giving them away, and I ended up selling 700, and that's how I started my first ISP.
Oh, really? That's a fascinating story. You got started by selling T-shirts?
Yep. I made $15,000, and a sweet young lady who was an inspector at the Super Collider, industrial engineer, helped me sell those because she knew all the other folks in the test facilities, and now she's my bride of 20 years.
Oh, no, that's another side story. You've got some stories. There's no doubt about that. Well, you know, Ed, our mutual friend Ed Hightower had prompted me. He says, Jeff's a great storyteller, and he can regale you with lots of neat things and keep you occupied for quite a bit. So if that's the case, what haven't I asked you? What have we missed? What do you want to really drive home?
We're going to keep all that quiet until the day, so people are intrigued about just showing up and having some fun.
Oh, no, really? You are? Okay. You're not going to leave any. You're not going to give us any. Take anything out of the bag yet, and quite show us exactly what you're going to be doing. This is all tease, right?
Well, you know, it's funny because the nice thing about having a background in this stuff is the ability to be able to talk at the Boy Scout level, to be able to explain it, and have people be able to understand the underlying technology and how it can be implemented into a business system in order to increase performance, increase profitability, and things like that. At the same time, the ability to be able to go deep and really understand the underlying mechanisms that are really driving this forward. So, for instance, we can, through question and answers, get into things like AI. My background, I have a PhD in robotics and artificial intelligence, and have done lots of interesting projects relative to classification algorithms, which are now being deployed in real systems in, as I said, in the healthcare, industrial automation, and also food, entertainment, and beverage, to be able to do things like prediction in order to do optimization. And, certainly at the, I call it, Maslow's hierarchy of telemetry needs. At the lowest layer of that hierarchy is just get me my data stupid. At the highest level of that hierarchy is optimization. And so I think that people really need to come to the Metricon conference in order to get a self-awareness of where they really are and what the steps are in order to evolve into the adoption of these technologies so they can take advantage of them in their own businesses and their own professional career.
Wow. Well, you've got a 16-year-old son right now in the Amazon jungle at a 200-degree river. That's a fascinating thing in itself. I get to be 200-degree. I guess it must be seismic activity below the river, I would suppose. And you've been mentored during the course of your career, and now you're in the process of mentoring. How about a word to live by? What do you tell your son as a creed, or maybe another student, or a friend, or someone else who's looking for maybe a guiding course to kind of live by? Words to live by. Can you help us with that?
I think passion is a big one. You figure out what your passion is. My son happens to have a passion in the arts and photography and things like that, and also in technology. And so by bringing those two together, allows him to be able to be an intern, for instance, for National Geographic. And I think for other youngsters that I see growing up, the level of acceleration of technology is fascinating. It is, as you said in the beginning of this conversation, it's hard to, we've done it for 50 years and it's hard to stay up with the technology, but at the same time, if you're up to that challenge, you'll have a fantastic career that'll be incredibly rewarding for your entire life. And the last is really lifelong learning. And that passion will drive that lifelong learning, and that lifelong learning will allow you to be very valuable to solving many of these really, complex and important problems we have around the world.
All right. Jeff Smith, managing partner, Quantum IoT, going to be making a presentation at the Metricon conference, October 26. You can learn more about that conference at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you will see a link. Jeff, so good of you to be with us. Thank you so much for taking the time to give us sort of a preview of what we can expect from your presentation at the Metricon conference.
Thank you, Carl.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz.